most women I speak to on my Instagram, like, I don't have a period. My period's irregular. My period's super heavy. I have PCOS. I have endometriosis. And like, it's just such a beautiful way for the kind of like universe calling us in. I'm like, this, whatever lifestyle you're living, it's not working for you. And that's why I get shocked when I see a fitness expert that has 4 million followers, making millions selling meal plans. But then she's like, I haven't had my period in 10 years, but you know, I look great. And I'm like, no, the fact that you're skinny is not an indication that you're healthy.
It isn't about being perfect. It's about being better. Hello, my name is Dr. Stephanie Stima, and I host expert discussions with thought leaders in all facets of health, including nutrition, fitness, hormones, stress management, performance, recovery, longevity, health span, and energy production. On this show, we discuss complex science, but then we also alchemize it into actionable everyday living. The ultimate goal with the show is to assist you in making informed decisions about your health and to catapult you into being the hero in your own life. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's me, your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. And today I'm bringing you a conversation with your new biohacking bestie, Aggie Lal. She is a renowned public figure, best-selling author, certified nutrition and health coach, podcast host, TV personality, and TEDx speaker with over 1.5 million social media followers and a vast audience across multiple channels. Aggie has become highly influential in the areas of health, biohacking, personal development, entrepreneurship, travel, and lifestyle. So we talked about cycling for the different parts of the menstrual cycle for women and how we might alter our nutrition, our training, how we might alter our fasting, and how our emotional landscape changes. And of course, we talk about stress management, so stress mitigation, forgiveness, micro fast, glucose regulation, what to eat, when to eat, and we even talk about Europe. Can you believe it? There's so many things that we cover in this conversation. I think that this is going to be a wonderful conversation for anybody wanting to understand how our cycle affects our mood. Certainly, if you are familiar with any of my work, you know that this is a passion project of mine. I even wrote a book about it, and I think that both of our books are very complementary to each other. So please enjoy this conversation with Aggie Lal. I'm in my mid-40s, and I have never felt more energized. I am training 5 times a week. I'm getting in 3 bike rides every single week. I recently reached a personal best of 15 neutral grip pull-ups, and I could have literally done it the next day if I wanted to. And I wanted to share with you what I've been doing that is making me feel so great. One of the cornerstones of my daily health regimen is Timeline Nutrition's MitoPure. MitoPure captures a pure form of the molecule Urolithin A. This is a postbiotic nutrient that re-energizes your mitochondria, which are the cells that are responsible for making energy and widely considered a cornerstone of longevity. Research has also shown that individuals supplementing with Urolithin A experience an increase in muscle strength and endurance without altering their diet or exercise routines, which is why I probably got the 15 PB, the personal best. I recorded a podcast with Dr. Anurag Singh, the scientist who discovered Urolithin A, and after our conversation, I started taking it as a recovery tool after my weightlifting sessions. I take it as a supplement, but it also comes in powder form, which is really great for travel. And they've also now combined it with a protein powder. So you can kind of get the 2-for-1 deal there. And I've also been using their skincare line, which helps with the skin's collagen and elastin matrix, making the skin look plump and juicy and helping reduce the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles. Right now, Timeline Nutrition is offering my Betties 10% off at timelinenutrition.com/better. That's TimelineNutrition.com/BETTER. Use code better to get 10% off. I want to talk to you about one of the most important molecules in your body to help keep your energy up as you age. I am talking about NAD. High NAD levels help our bodies by creating energy, maintaining healthy DNA, and protecting our cellular health. But in our 30s, unfortunately, as young as our 30s, our NAD levels start to plummet. So you need to start supporting your NAD levels now. I absolutely love a formula that just came out within the last year called Qualia NAD. It is so unique because it has all three NAD precursors. So for my nerds, those are niacin, niacinamide, and nicotinamide riboside, which supports NAD production by boosting your NAD levels by up to 50%. It is vegan, non-GMO, gluten-free, and if you're over the age of 35, if you want to start taking it now, this will be one of the best things that you can do for your aging process. You can try Qualia NAD risk-free for 100 days by going to neurohacker.com/better and use the code BETTER at checkout to get 15% off of your order. That's the Qualia NAD at neurohacker.com/better, like the show, B-E-T-T-E-R, and use the code BETTER at checkout for 15% off. All right. Aggie, welcome to the podcast. Today we are talking about biohacking for women and lots of overlap, lots of synergies in terms of philosophies, in terms of female-centric principles for living our best life. So I'm very happy to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super honored. I'm a big fan. So I'm like, you know, it's a little pinch me moment for me.
Well, let's actually just dive right in. So your book is Biohacking for Women, your handle Biohacking Bestie, which I love. Let's talk about how, just general principles, how women are not little men. How are we different from our male counterparts who are, you know, presenting, you know, things like fasting and training and nutrition? How do females differ? And what are some of the things that women want to be considering when we are trying to maximize and optimize our health and vitality?
Yeah, it's such a great question. Because I think when you're maybe 3 or 4 years old, that's the first time when you realize, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not like my brother or, you know, a friend or a cousin. I look a little different. And then the older you get, you realize, I'm like, oh, yeah, like I have different parts. And I also like can, you know, have different needs. And somehow we forget that these differences continue when you get a little older. And so when I got into biohacking, I had a lot of health issues. I was a travel influencer, for those of you who don't know. So I was like living this amazing life, being away for 300 days a year, just traveling the best hotels, working on the most remote places in the world. But somehow I started getting sick. I'm like, what is going on? I'm doing everything right according to what the mainstream would tell me. So,
and what was that? What was
juice cleanses, vegan diet, avoid fat, especially saturated fat. And somehow it wasn't really working for me. Again, I still think that there's some people that thrive on these diets. So like, no offense. It's just, I haven't seen people that I have worked with or I have personally experienced that there is an element of animal protein or animal fat that helps us women feel better. But regardless of that, I was just like following the mainstream advice, getting more and more sick. And then I came across Dave Asprey. And I was like, oh my God, these old, and Gary Bricker and this. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. I'm going to do exactly what they do. And then so it was great. I saw some results, but there was part of me that felt like a loser or weak for not always being able to do that. And so as you probably know, like 7 or 8 years ago, the women didn't have the microphone, you know, it wasn't as like, we're just waking up and calling in the feminine into like, let's use the technology, but do it our own way. Like we're not men. And so as I just, you know, I learned the hard way, and I'm sure you did too, because you had to navigate a very masculine world. And so it required a lot of like intuition, like, dang, like what he's saying is correct. And the science is correct. But there's a part of me that feels like, it's just not today that I'm going to do a cold plunge. It's not today that I feel like fasting because I feel really hungry and stop feeling like I'm broken and something's wrong, but just like treating symptoms. I'm like, oh, these are just signs because my body's so intelligent and she knows what she needs. And yeah, so that was like the big revolution where I was just like asking my followers, I'm like, who wants to like learn how to fast according to your cycle with me? And it was just like all of these women were like, wow, I don't really feel seen in this space. So that's why people like yourselves that you bring, like, I want to like, that's why you're coming on my podcast, because I want to like bring all of these women, give them even more voice, even more power, because not because we need more women in the space, 100%, but we need men to learn from women, because men live in a very wounded masculine energy and they're getting burned out, you know, and they need that feminine energy. And what what I'm noticing is like people, I don't know what's your audience breakdown, but it's a little bit like, oh, if you're a woman, you're doing content for women. But if you're a guy, you're doing for both. And then, so that's what I want to change because
that's
I think.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Isn't it a little like that?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
guys feels like, what can I learn from you? I don't have ovaries. Or like people about my book, I'm like, well, it's a biohack like a woman. Clearly it's like a book for women. But I'm like, what if you started like calling in that, you know, it's all about yin and yang. That's very old school that men are purely masculine, that women are purely feminine. We live in the masculine as well as women, right? Like doing this podcast and just like having career. And if men can embrace a little bit of softness and intuition, like that's it. What a beautiful man that is, right? Like we are attracted
how
to
sexy, men
that are both.
How sexy is that, right? A man
so
who's
sexy.
Also, you know, he's IQ and he has EQ, right? He has like that emotional intelligence.
Emotionally mature women, we need both and we want to be able, like what's sexier than a guy who's like, babe, day 14 of your cycle? Oh, wow.
Yes, exactly.
That's so good. Like, and he actually knows what he's talking about. I'm like, it's not that complicated. I'm like, this is going to be your superpower. If there are any men listening to this, and I really hope they will be, like, learn from women. Like, women were elders and they were, you know, at the forefront of the bridge between the life and death, right? Like, we're the ones bringing life. Like, there's so much of in their intelligence that nature blessed us with, that it would be nice to, you know, just open your mind to it and not always listen to guys. Although I love everyone in the biohacking space. All the guys are great, but they're guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Of course. Yeah. I made a note here as you were talking about calling in the feminine. And I have to, you know, just double click on that for a moment, because I do think many women, at least the women in my community, so just the demographics of the podcast does skew female. On YouTube, for some reason, we're half and half. So we're half,
oh, good.
Like about half women, half men, which is awesome. But on the podcast, some of the stats that we get, it's about 60 to 70% female. But how great is it for us to be thinking about calling in the feminine? And that's sex agnostic. It's just the energy, I think, that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that feminine energy, which is soft and nourishing and still, and not trying to always hustle and push. And I've said this on the show before, my own personal journey, you know, being a doctor and getting into the school that I did get into and the programs, you know, I did neuroscience and psychology as a sort of a double undergrad. Very, very male.
Well, wasn't
right?
enough, so guys. She did not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. But that's the thing. It's like achieve, and you know, it's like you're always on the hunt. You're always trying to, you know, slay some dragon. You're always trying to slay some success, some accolade. And so many women who would identify with the type A personality kind of archetype have lost that connection. We ourselves have lost that connection to the softness, to the slowness, to the stillness. And so a lot of women who listen to the show, we actually have a lot of clinicians who listen to the show, but we also have a lot of women in perimenopause navigating that transition into menopause who have been told, oh, it's just, you know, it's just aging. If this is just what happens for you, and no hormone, like hormones are bad for you. They're going to give you breast cancer or a heart attack or whatever it is. And don't lift too heavy. You know, it's like pink it and shrink it, right? So here, like, here's your 2-pound dumbbells and, you know, do 5,000 reps of them. And it's like, okay, you can totally do that. But the psychological, you know, like the psychological hype that you have to do that, I would just rather you lift heavy, like some heavy weights for, you know, whatever reps. And we'll get into training for your cycle, because I've also written about how it does ebb and flow over the course of your cycle. But back to this idea of the feminine, how beautiful would it be for our women and our men to acknowledge, whether it's a female who's, you know, who's going through that menstrual cycle, through that 28-ish, 29-day cycle, for that dark chocolate to show up in week 4 for our husbands.
100%.
Right? Or, yeah, I just love that. And even just for our beautiful men, like to give our men permission to say, hey, you know what, like I'm struggling today, or I'm frustrated or something, I need some support. I think that's the world that I dream of. So yeah, I just wanted to pause on that for a moment, because I do think that it's very important.
And that's the thing. It's like we think that women, you know, it's this idea that, oh, women are so masculine right now and overachievers, and like we're the feminine women. And there's this idea that feminine is very passive. It's like extremely passive and not taking action and feeling it's a victim mentality and manipulative and whatnot, versus healthy feminine is like, I need to take some action to nourish myself. You know, like it's like the balance of both. If you can manage that, that's your superpower. And I think that's why I'm so happy with people like yourself that can really, I've been in that journey. I did like ultra masculine and I was like, okay, that was great, but it's burning me out. It's making me stressed out, you know, and we have a fertility crisis with women just not being able to get pregnant, or most women I speak to on my Instagram, like, I don't have a period. My period's irregular. My period's super heavy. I have PCOS. I have endometriosis. And like, it's just such a beautiful way for the kind of like universe calling us in. I'm like, this, whatever lifestyle you're living, it's not working for you. And right. That's why I get shocked when I see a fitness expert that is, you know, has 4 million followers, making courses and, you know, making millions selling meal plans. But then she's like, I haven't had my period in 10 years, but you know, I look great. And I'm like, no, the fact that you're skinny is not an indication that you're healthy. And always period being your fifth vital sign, this is the best indication of like, am I healthy? Am I thriving? Is my body happy? If something is off, like, okay, great. Let's go see a doctor that has a good understanding of that your period is worth fighting for. It's not just like a thing. I just don't have my period. Like, it's so nonchalant.
It's so common, isn't it, in the fitness industry? It's about, like, I would say probably half, maybe even more, you know, female, let's say, influencers are amenorrheic. They're not menstruating correct, you know, regularly every month, or maybe they miss periods and it's because their body fat is too low. And I think one of the things I appreciated about your book was you talked about this idea of being strong versus skinny.
Yeah.
So maybe we can go there. Let's talk a little bit about maybe that shift in paradigm in terms of how we can move from trying to always be skinny to moving to gamify strength, which is what really works for type A personalities like myself, or recovering type A. Because it's like, how much can I lift? I want to be able to be strong. I want to feel strong in my body, proud of what my body is capable of. Certainly understanding it's a long game, right? Like, becoming strong does take time. Putting on muscle does take time. It's a lifelong endeavor, really, and a beautiful one to chase. So let's talk a little bit about how you approach, let's say, being strong in your body. And I know you talk about cyclical training, which is something I'd like to talk about as well. But I would love to hear your framework around it.
Yeah. You know, I started a few years ago weighing 89 pounds. You know, I'm petite, but still 89 pounds is ridiculous because there was this fashion, the skinnier, the better. But I couldn't lift my backpack, you know, when I was traveling. I couldn't do so many things. And I just felt like very fragile in a way, navigating through the world, but not in an energetical sense, like I wouldn't be able to hit someone, but from the place of like, just not feeling good in my body, in my own environment. I felt like, you know, I was worried to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, spoiler alert, it's not
so
that easy.
Funny. Yeah, but I wish it was that easy.
But the funny thing is I lived in Venice. And so I started going to the gym and Arnold was there every morning. So we were gym buddies. Oh, wow. We said good morning to each other. I was like, that is funny. And I saw how much he lifts. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm good. Definitely a long way for me to go. That whole idea of like lifting heavy and just being scared, because I guess I didn't have an example of feminine women that are toned. I wanted to be toned. I didn't want to be bulky. And then I can see that you lived it, but you're tall and beautiful, right? So it's really cool too. If you guys are listening to this, you maybe can't see, but then you have to go on Instagram or YouTube to see your arms and just like, wow, this looks really, really nice. And then I started learning about like skeletal muscles and I did a little scan. Turned out I have no skeletal muscles because I'm, you know, not moving properly. So it's not even about your biceps or triceps, but just like overall skeletal muscles. I'm like, wow, like, at 35, I started noticing that my back hurts and I go to a physiotherapist and he's like, oh yeah, like you need better posture, and the better posture comes from like stronger muscle as well and how you like carry yourself. And so that kind of opened my eyes of like, oh wow, like it's not only an anti-aging, they realize that the tighter your, you know, your posture changes, then it can cause wrinkles. And I always like to mention that because a lot of women were like, I don't care about posture. And I'm like, no, you do. Because, you know, we wear high heels. You know, we have a lot of stress. And they say like the back of your neck and how it can actually, I mean, it's different theories. But the more I started caring about my posture, the more I realized that my lines are gone on my forehead. Because it's really interesting how that stress.
Because the aponeurosis comes around the head and then attaches to the
back. Yeah. So it's like, it's such a power move for you to have stronger muscles have a better posture, and then you don't have all these aches and pain. So at the same time, it's just really interesting that it's like, it's a beauty hack, you know, that no one told you about before, you know, before any facial or Botox or anything, which is like, I'm not against those, but just like really interesting how it's all connected, and kind of like having an instruction manual of how to use your body, which is so sad that we need to have it right now. So long story short, back to your question, I wanted to figure out a way of, you know, how to lift weights. I did it every day. And then I realized sometimes some workouts I'm not performing as well. So I felt bad and broken and kind of felt like, how come Arnold can come every day? And I sometimes feel like I don't, and started reading it up. And I just was like, wow, there are some like, you know, bold theories that if you go too much into HIIT or you lift too heavy before your workout, you can actually put on weight. And that had my attention. I was like, oh, interesting. And then like, actually everything in nature is almost cyclical, right? Because we're lunar, nothing, there's no flowers, there's, you know, no trees, like everything has some sort of cycle. And yet we're expecting ourselves to be always producing, always lifting as much at the gym and constantly progressing. And that kind of like got me curious. And I started lifting according to my cycle. And I now love giving myself permission to take a break.
That's wonderful. And so what does that look like for you now in terms of practical application? So if you're mm-hmm. lifting according to your, so initially I assume like myself, I was like, oh, I want to be, so I always mention Dom D'Agostino, who's sort of like the king of keto, and he's now become a friend. But before I knew him and his wife, I remember him fasting. I think he had done a fast for maybe it was 7 days, something like that. And then went and deadlifted like 700 pounds, or just some like ridiculous number. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I can do that. I want to try and do that as well. Of course.
Oh my God, we're so similar.
Yeah. And it's like, did not end up that, did not work out that way. It was horrendous. My period, my cycle was messed up for a couple of months afterwards. So tell me, that's how I've sort of changed my view on fasting for women, which I know we're going to get to, but I'm curious in terms of what your framework is for cycling for women. So do you divide it into weeks? Is it follicular luteal? Is it like you do this ovulation? Tell me how you're thinking about training.
So I give myself a couple days of grace from the first day of my period, you know, and that's basically where I feel usually my period, like by day three, even though I still have bleed, I feel absolutely great and strong. So I allow myself to kind of just like release, and I still move my body, but it's just not to the extreme. Then I would lift my weights, focusing on my ovulation. And it's funny, I kind of feel where my ovulation is around day 13, 14. And that's where I lift the heaviest. Then I kind of like slowly wean back. And then from day 21, it's just like 7 days where I just like maintenance, right? So these are some lighter Pilates or just like some lighter weights and just like doing more of a functional training, something that just strengthens my knees and bones, but there's no like heavy weights and there's no ton of HIIT training. So I do upper body, lower body when I do workout. And then on the third day, I do endurance. So,
right. Yeah, that's very similar. I always lead with, and I talked about this in my book, I said, you know, always auto-regulate. If you're feeling amazing on your period and you feel like lifting weights, like have at it. But for many women, to your point, the first couple of days there's cramping, you just feel sort of under the weather. You don't feel like, you know, squatting and putting a heavy barbell on your back. So I do like that cadence that you outlined where you sort of are lifting and then you reach sort of a crescendo around ovulation. So the heaviest weights maybe that you will lift in that cycle, and then sort of it comes back down on the other side. I actually have outlined almost the identical framework in terms of, and I always look at week four, almost like a deload week, right? So if you still feel like you want to be lifting weights, you can, but to your point, it's going to be lighter weights and it's going to be higher repetition. So the intensity mm-hmm. is still there. You still have the intensity and you're moving towards failure. You're not necessarily reaching failure, but it's a lighter weight.
Yeah. And or do lunges or anything that can like strengthen those. Because, you know, a lot of times when you're on the machines or if you lift heavy weights, it's very straight. So I'm trying to do anything that's at an angle to strengthen all of these like supporting muscle. But I love that you say that because I get actually in trouble with a lot of doctors because they're like, no, like you should like start lifting from day one. I'm like, have you ever like been in a woman's body? Like it's not easy on day one for a lot of women to like, okay, I'm going to start lifting heavy. So yeah. I personally find that it's like, I used to have much heavier periods. I'm 36 now, so they're not as heavy as they used to be. And so by day three, I feel absolutely great. But the first 2 days, I just feel like, no.
It's so, you know what women love more than anything, Aggie? Women love when men explain to them about their periods.
Oh, yeah.
we just, that's the one thing that we love. We're like, please, doctor, please tell me about how I feel during my period. Tell me how I should be starting at day one. Like, just explain me my life to me. And of course, I'm saying that with, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see the sarcasm in my face, but hopefully you can pick it up in my voice as well. I have heard from, and I've reviewed some of the studies, there's meta-analyses that have been done that cannot pick up signaling, a strong enough signal, statistically significant signal around changing the way that you cycle. And my response to that is, okay, get it. And that doesn't fit with the narrative of the tens of thousands of women that I've spoken to. So
that's what drives me crazy. I'm like, have you actually spoken with women? Have you actually been hanging out with women and talking about it? Because like I as you're saying, right? Like it's just this disconnect of when I see recently I saw exactly a guy who's like, here's what happened in your body when you're like on your cycle. And I was like, honestly, no. No.
Yeah, it's like, thanks for telling me. That man explained it to me a little bit more. I didn't catch it the first time. Yeah. Yeah. I always, and not to say that we're disregarding literature, like we're not disregarding studies. However, because the signal was not strong enough to be statistically significant, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It doesn't. And this is one of the things that I would like to always sort of double underline and highlight is you should always be listening to women. Any time that I've seen any of these, and they're always bros, by the way, it's for whatever reason, it's always like the bros in the fitness industry that are saying, oh, this is a non-issue. If you ever look at the comments, whenever they have a post like this, thousands of women are like, that's not my experience at all. I feel terrible the first couple of days of my period, or I feel like I have so much energy around ovulation, or I feel generally like I'm holding a lot of water retention and my mood and my affect are affected in my luteal phase. And one of the guiding principles that I will always have in terms of trying to do my part in advancing women's medicine is like never disregard a woman's story. If you have tens of thousands of women that are saying that their cycle does affect mood, affect, energy, motivation, and then there's also a lot of literature to demonstrate that there's like the surge in estrogen changes our ligament laxity and all of that. Please don't say that. Yeah. It's not, it's a non-issue. And from day one, you should be training hard. Like, please, please stop.
Thank you. Thank you for saying PSA. That. And I think that's really what I guess I'm a very unlikely biohacker because I wasn't ever, you know, I'm not a doctor. Like, I didn't feel like I have the right to ever speak about any of this. But at the same time, as I got into the biohacking space, just as a fan of this whole idea of human optimization, I realized I'm like, well, my role is being the bridge. You know, I'm the bridge of getting the mainstream following that have never heard the word, never heard what it's like to be according to a cycle. And I'm like, hey, I'm starting a podcast and I'm bringing all of these smart people so you can be exposed to them. And I just get them curious and show them, hey, this is what's possible. But by the way, these are the experts, because at the end of the day, we need more women, we need more female voices, but also, you know, I say it in the book that women are OG biohackers. We've been biohacking since 13 when you get your period. I'm like, why is it this color? Why am I feeling this way? Why is my stomach hurting? Like, you constantly get biofeedback every month, almost like every day. And that makes us just such better biohackers because, again, it comes from the feeling, which is feminine, not from the head, which is masculine. So when you look at the studies and you're like, oh, I should be feeling this way. And then we come from the head. Meanwhile, everything is, you know, all over the place. Well, that's where the issues start. And I think that's like why listening to men and running studies on college boys that are 21 years old has brought us to the point of women really struggling with their periods and feeling, you know, at endocrine disruptors and whatnot. So,
right. Well said. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you've probably heard me talk about cold plunges. They are one of my favorite tools for speeding up muscle recovery and boosting my mood and focus. Today, I want to share a little secret that I've been using to make my cold plunges even more effective, taking a mineral shot before I get in the water. Now, cold plunges are so useful for muscle healing and recovery, which is why they're so good when they're done on the same day as a workout. But the process of muscle rebuilding can be really expensive. We use close to a dozen different minerals in large amounts in that reparative process. And if your mineral stores are low, you're not going to get the full recovery benefits that a cold plunge might offer. So that's why I take a shot of Beam Minerals before I do a cold plunge. It is a full spectrum liquid mineral supplement that gives you every single mineral that your body needs in the right ratio with rapid absorption. So I want you to try this for the next time that you're doing your cold plunge with a Beam Mineral shot for an extra boost. Head over to beamminerals.com and use the code BETTER at checkout, and you're going to save 20% off of your first order. All right, let's talk a little bit about fasting. Again, you know, bringing up Dom, and I've said this to Dom, so it's not like I'm saying anything out of context, but, you know, he was a big proponent of fasting. There were others, when I was first really getting into fasting, who were talking about this quite a bit, all men, and I was like, oh, I will do the same thing. Of course, with my experience that I just shared with Dom, you know, sort of watching Dom and trying to emulate what he was doing kind of messed up my own cycle for a couple of cycles after I tried that, which did lead me to think about fasting for women and how we might be different in terms of like whatever the hormonal composition is dictating that, you know, for that day or for that week or for that part of the cycle. I'd love to hear your framework around fasting for women, what you currently do, and then how you might modify your fasting over the course of your cycle.
Yeah. And so again, this is just my experience and might not be exactly everyone's. I see from my closest girlfriends that fasting can trigger a lot of unhealthy relationship with food. And I can see how it triggers like them. So it's just like a big disclaimer. It might not be for everyone for sure. And people have refeeding syndromes or they go to extreme. And my whole point always is fasting without feasting is, you know, starvation, right? And it's like a big difference that you actually eat when you eat. And I love food. I love eating. So this is great. But obviously when I first got into fasting, I was like, I'm going to do it every day. And I'm going to do it more and more. I started this 21-day fast that was just like bone broth, elemental diet kind of a thing. It was just like, I'm like, I'm going to do it for 4 weeks. You know, 2 weeks in, I lost my period. And it took a while for me to get it back. It was like 2 or 3 months. And obviously, that was like a big warning sign. I'm like, oh, perhaps I can't really be so nonchalant about limiting calories and fat and out of my diet. And for me, it's like a big red flag when I lose my period. I'm like, it only happened twice in my life. And so that when I realized, I'm like, what if happens if I, you know, stop fasting, like at least a week in my week four and just wake up in the morning, have breakfast in the morning. And then I push my fast, you know, my favorite time to fast is between day 7 to 11. That's like, I personally feel like this is like my prime time to fast. And I definitely delay my breakfast. But it also, with that said, you know, I just had a book launch, and as you know how stressful the book launches are, I was like, I knew it's day 7 and I knew it's time for me to push myself with fasting. At the same time, I felt so stressed. I was like, I don't need another stressor. I don't need to do all the things that I usually do. And so I just had breakfast and haven't fasted for 2 months. And now I'm slowly going back to it because I feel safe in my body. So I think my relationship with fasting went from very extreme fasting every day, 18, 20 hours sometimes, to now just kind of realizing like, okay, maybe it's not what I need right now. And I'm, you know, I'm in this stage where I'd like to have a baby soon, maybe in a year. I don't want to make my body feel like there isn't, you know, enough nourishment. And so I'm being very intentional about it. But I guess it's different for women. And maybe if you're past that period, a period of wanting to have kids and you feel great, you're still cycling, then by all means, go for it. But it's just such a unique topic. I'm sure you know, as you have worked with women, that can trigger a lot of unhealthy patterns.
Yeah, you said something really intelligent. I just want to come back to it for a moment, which was when you launched your book, even though it was day 7 to 11, which is traditionally the time that you like to be fasting, that you checked in with your body and made sort of the executive decision to say, hey, there's an extra load that I have right now with the book launch and the podcast tour and, you know, launching a book, like, you know, whether it's a presentation that you have at work or, you know, you have a big deadline that's coming up. It's a big ask of your body. So there's lots of traveling, there's lots of talking, there's lots of front facing and putting on your, it's energetically very taxing. And what you just demonstrated really was auto-regulation. It's like, this is the time in my cycle where I really do like to fast. I really do like to push it. My body is actually more resilient during this time to push the fasting, but I'm not going to do it because I have this other load. I have this other stressor that I'm dealing with because launching this book and getting it out to the world is really important to me. And this is kind of the cornerstone, really, even with training. You know, you might say, hey, it's like there's been many months where I am ovulating, like I also feel when I'm ovulating. I know which ovary, I know when it happens. Like I feel exactly when I'm ovulating. I know exactly. But it's crazy. But there'll be some times where I'm ovulating where I should be saying, hey, this is the heaviest I'm gonna lift this month. And I don't have it in me for whatever reason. I didn't sleep well. My kid was up last night, whatever the reason is. And then I modify it. So I think that having these guiding principles that you're talking about in the book, where you fast according to your cycle or you train according to your cycle, is a wonderful guide. It's a wonderful template. And you can put your own stamp of individuality on it based on what's happening in your life at the time. So I just wanted to just kind of come back to that, because that so many women sort of white knuckle it, right? Like so many women would have said, no, it's day 7. I have to fast for 18 hours. Like this is what I'm supposed to do because I'm ovulating, rather than sort of overlaying again, coming back to that sort of feminine, like, what do you actually need? You know, being someone who is
like a parent to yourself.
Yeah.
And you're just like, hey, like this, I'm not going to push you today. Like, that's not fair of me to ask you this, because you're already doing so much. You already have all the stressors. So I love that, how much we align on this, because again, this is not coming from your head, but coming from like, okay, I don't live in silo. My only job in the world isn't to biohack and train. I also have real life. I might be a mom. I'm running a business. Like hey, if all you do is train and your only job is to look good, I mean, by all means. But most women I know live a real life and they have to go shopping for groceries and take care of their families. So it's just
and
like
meal prep and getting the kids to soccer games and all the things. And also, you know, where you are in your, you know, stage in your life wanting to have children, you definitely always want to be having, there definitely always needs to be a safety signal to the body. Your body should never be like, are we going to have food? Should we get pregnant? Maybe this is not a good time to, you know, there's not enough substrate. There's not enough nutrients around. So maybe we'll just skip this cycle, because if she gets pregnant now, this is a bad deal, right? So, you know, you always want to be thinking about, how can I send the safety signal to my ovaries, right? Like tell them that it's okay, girls. You can work this month.
Yeah. But to be fair, it's also like you, because a lot of people are like, I guess when I think back of where I was, it didn't feel like a big deal to skip my period back in the day. Because I was like, well, I don't want to have kids. What's a big deal? You know, if I push myself and lose a little bit of, you know, belly fat, you know, I kind of like that athletic look. And obviously I don't have a six pack. If you see me on Instagram, I'm like, I just look normal. But my biggest thing was like, your period is your superpower. And when you ovulate, you actually look better. You get stronger. You help, you know, how your body like manages glucose and insulin. And so you are considered attractive. Like more attractive. This is a time for you to shine. So like, even if you don't want to have kids, period isn't this annoying thing that it's not something that it's just like, okay, I only need it. I remember thinking that when I was a teenager, wait, I'm going to get maybe one or two kids, but I have to have period every month. I was like, that just doesn't make any sense. I'm like, no. But like the period's actually a superpower. No one told me about like ovulation is my unfair advantage over men. I get stronger and more beautiful, and strippers that were on ovulations versus the ones that were on the pill would get twice as many tips because we have pheromones, and like use them to your advantage, you know, instead of like numbing it all or just feeling like it's a burden. Like it is your superpower. And so I realized, I'm like, I don't care if I have kids or not. I want my period. This is like, I want the ovulation. I want even luteal phase. Again, we live in a masculine world, which is this idea that like the more you produce, the better. The more podcasts, the more posts you post. Wait, you're not on TikTok, you're not on YouTube. I'm sure you can relate. And you have the more you put out there, the better. And I think we're just slowly waking up of this brainwash because we realize, oh, like, you know, I live between Los Angeles and Bali. And the reason I live in Bali is because it's very feminine energy. So no one glorifies being busy. It's almost like looked down upon. Here, when you don't work, people think you're lazy in the US. They're like, oh, she has nothing to do. Or like if you ask someone, how have you been? And you say, not really busy. I'm just hanging out. People would think that's like, oh, that's sad. she must not be doing very well. Like for someone who's run their business. So it's almost like a badge of honor. Oh, I've been so busy. And without realizing that as you create that pause and space around you, it's when the best ideas come. It's when the biggest thinkers and philosophers and visionaries, oh, their only job was to create space around them to call in a deeper, more powerful ideas. And we're not really leaving any space in our lives for magic, for the universe to actually just like surprise us because we're just like plan every day back to back.
Beautiful. Yeah, so well said. I think that we need to give ourselves space, that creative void, in order to be creationists, right? In order to be creatrixes, if you will. Yeah. And I remember I had one of my friends on the show a while ago now when she released Dr. Jolene Brighton, and she released a book called Beyond the Pill, and she was talking about post-birth control syndrome. And she said something, you just reminded me of what she was talking about with women who were on the birth control pill versus women who were naturally ovulating. They were exotic dancers. And it's just what you said, like they, you know, women who were ovulating would get better tips. So she was like, listen, so your period is not just about having kids. It's also affecting your bottom line, ladies. What I thought was so funny.
100%.
Yeah, so, it's so good.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, has anyone ever told you this? Growing up like in fifth grade, I'm like, by the way, there will be a couple of days every month where you can just go for it, ask for a raise and you're more likely to get it. It's the time for you to like just shine and like embrace everything that you are. But what do we tell women? Oh, you feel horny around ovulation? Well, that's just not good. You know, that's wrong. Yeah. You know, you're not allowed to be those things, but we're designed to like procreate and keep the species alive. Of course, around ovulation, we feel good in our bodies. We're feeling ourselves. And, you know, it might be like a big taboo topic of like, oh no, like this. I'm sure like I have a little bit more freedom because I'm like, okay, but you as a doctor, like I think there's this, all of that stigma. Also, as a doctor, you're not meant to be looking sexy or looking hot because, you know, it's not, or you're a mom, whatever the story society tells you, but it's absolutely completely normal. And I think it's super hot when a woman is like both, you know, I'm smart, but I also love my body and I'm not going to apologize for feeling good in my body and feeling sexy.
I love that. And I think that there can be, you know, you can hold two truths at the same time. Like you can be smart and you can also be sexy, right? You can be a mother and you can also be sexy. It's like not just as soon as you become a mother, it's like, oh, well, you just, your former self, you lose your former self. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that black and white. In the same way that once you reach 40, you're over the hill or you're deteriorating every second. It's like, pardon my French, you know, but F that, you know, like there can be many things. You can be smart and silly. You can be happy and sad. There's many truths that we can hold at the same time. So I just love that you're saying that. And, you know, speaking of French, because I am a Francophile. I absolutely love the French language. You mentioned something about, you know, living in LA versus Bali. And I just had this, it's totally random, but I'll just throw it out to you and see what you think. I wonder if it would be worth compiling cities or places in the world that tend to be more masculine and feminine. So like Paris, for example, yes, it's a city, it's a bustling city, but they will throw you out of the country if you are there in track pants. Like you have to bring your style, you know, you have to sort of, you know, take some time to put on your makeup and, you know, dress beautifully, even if you're just going to get a croissant in the morning, which maybe is not the best choice for a breakfast, but, you know.
But so they get away with it. That's the beauty, because why? And it's this whole thing. I'm like, Well, I said in the book, like, I actually was writing part of the book in Paris, and they're like, do you want American breakfast or French breakfast? And I'm like, well, American's right. technically better. Eggs, bacon, like, this is all everything that biohacking tells me to eat. And then I see all the French women eating croissant, but it's your nervous system. Like, their nervous system isn't in fight or flight 24/7 because they see that dolce far niente, which is Italian for the sweetness of doing nothing, is yes. the goal of it. So everything works with biohacking and nothing does if your nervous system is dysregulated. And so right. even in a city, I love that you say that. It reminds me of, I don't know if you read Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth
Gilbert. Oh, I did, yes.
And remember how she said that every city has a word. And so she stopped living in New York because the word was achieve and she didn't resonate with it anymore. Yeah. And I think it's very, very true that like LA's word would be possibility, I think. Like that, just like calling, it's just like maybe not the hard work in LA, but like possibility of who you know and like people trying to collaborate. I think Bali is definitely like being, you know, so all I do is just like, because all the locals are, you know, they practice Buddhism, everyone around me, it's like I come out of my house and we live in a very local area. And so everyone's putting these little offerings in front of their homes at 7 a.m. when I go for a walk along the rice fields and do a little prayer, a little ceremony. And, you know, first time I got to Bali, I was so annoyed because everything was slow and things were closed. And, oh, another ceremony and I can't get places, you know, like very masculine, like it's a Tuesday at 1 p.m. Everyone should be working. And right. for them, it's like, no, we need to stop. And so they stop 3 times a day to a little prayer ceremony, just slowing down. And every country that does that, you don't really see obese people. You don't see people that, you know, to that extent, like Italians and Spanish, and they eat late dinners at 11 p.m. And the rules don't really add up. And I even think this whole idea with blue zones about how we really watch their diet. And I'm like, it almost feels like diet is so secondary. When you have community and you have the right lifestyle, when you have a purpose, I don't really feel like it matters. And we're focusing almost on the what, but it's the how, you know, and when.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that part of the reason why we see in Sardinia and in all, you know, in Okinawa and all of these blue zones across the planet, they have very, very strong communal networks. Their yeah. elders are... they're not shipped off to, you know, homes or like they live with the family. They're around their grandchildren. They're around their children. They sit down for dinner time and they have wine and they have, and many of them smoke and like they do yeah. all of these different sort of quote unquote bad things. But what they do have is very, very robust and deep connections to their local community, which is important.
What do you think is your word?
My word.
Or where you live. What do you think is?
I'm in Toronto, so this is very much a miniature version of New York, I would say. So
yeah.
So New York, if there's a word, I actually wrote an article. I read an article, not wrote one. I wish I was this smart, but I read an article on New York and LA, and so it was like New York was money, and LA was who you know. It's just what you were saying, like connection.
Right? Yeah.
Silicon Valley was influence and power. Same with Washington, same kind of thing. I would say Toronto is very much like money and power. I love this conversation. Just finishing up our conversation on fasting, you talk about microfasts, and I really, really loved this.
Oh,
I wanted to know if you could expand a little bit on microfasts. It's such a, these are some of the things that really move the needle. They're the small little behavioral modifications that in aggregate actually add up to a huge deal. So talk a little bit about microfasts, when to eat, and then I would love to know in terms of just general recommendations in terms of what you like to eat. You've already mentioned animal yeah. protein. Again, we're aligned there, but I would like to like talk when to eat and then what to eat.
Yeah, it means a lot that it resonates because I made up the serum of microfast, but I'm as you as a doctor, I was just curious if you agree or resonate. But you know, I would have 6 or 7 meals a day, you know, not too long ago because
we were taught that, you know, the more you fuel, like you feed the metabolic fire, the more that you're eating.
Yes. And this idea also that you're never supposed to go hungry. The moment you feel hungry, it's too late. They say like the moment you're thirsty, like you wait too dehydrated. And it's a little bit like I was taught that if I'm feeling hungry, that's already too late. And I'm going to go into some sort of starvation mode when I I will overeat. And so I did that, right? And so I would get bloated, and I thought I was, you know, I was drinking smoothies and a latte and tried to spread my meals that I would have lunch. And then an hour later, I would have a little snack or a dessert. And I just, it's funny. The funny thing is I felt like, oh my God, I'll never be healthy and I'll never be fit without actually questioning the very things that I'm doing every day. It's funny how we feel like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And then you eliminate one thing and you're like, actually, nothing is wrong with me. I just can't have oat milk.
Exactly. It's how I feel. It's how I feel, you know, the day that I start my period. I'm like, oh, it wasn't my husband's chewing or breathing. It was when I was getting my period.
Oh my God. Yes, yeah. I was like, it was two periods ago. Like, it was just the day before. And I'm like crying all the time. And I'm like, I don't know if we should be together, babe. And then I go to the bathroom, look at my period. I'm like, babe, I take it back.
Yeah. True.
I was like, okay, now it makes sense. So yeah, it's funny how like just understanding your biology helps you just navigate better through the world. And I think back in the day, I was very much into Tony Robbins and, you know, understanding how to like become the best version of yourself. And again, I believe that we can mind over matter, we can override so many things in our bodies, but understanding what's happening is just so much more helpful because it gives you so much grace, which is not, grace is not energy that we give to ourselves as women or other women. It's, and I think the new generation of women, they're going to be much more, they will exercise way more grace towards each other and themselves. Because I think that's like a really big thing. It's just like speaking from my experience, always pushing myself and feeling like, come on, you can do it, Aggie. Like, you know, don't be weak. Others do it, so you should be doing it too. If you're a higher achiever, if you want to like make something out of yourself, you should be, you know, fasting and doing X, Y, and Z. So to be honest with you, when I heard that maybe eating six meals a day isn't great, I tried it and I couldn't do it. I couldn't have three meals a day and I didn't have metabolic flexibility. So I wasn't sure what that means, but I was like, wow, like, people eat only three meals a day. I just wasn't able to do it on my vegan diet because I would get hungry every 2 hours. I would also like finish a meal and would still be by the fridge looking at the fridge. I'm like, I need something. I just don't know what, right? It was just that, oh, I hate that feeling that I never felt fully satiated because I was massively undernourished. So now doing three meals a day is really easy. And so I'm encouraging women to do micro fasts. So instead of having an oat milk latte in the morning and then a little snack because it felt like, you know, a bite of avocado toast when I get to work or before I go to work and then half of a banana, and we grazing throughout the day nonstop. And so I started reading and I realized that there is something called MMC, which basically kind of like helps us digest the food. And you're a doctor, so you can definitely explain better. But this whole idea that I explained it because it's like a caboose from my understanding that goes from your stomach through your intestine. And every time you eat, it goes back up. So it kind of leaves the undigested food. It takes like a 90 minutes to 2 hours to be able to fully like process the food. So we have constipation, which is super common for all women. We have bloating. Like ask any woman that you know if she experienced bloating recently, and it's like very, very common. And I think it comes from not giving our body a chance to have a break between meals. And then I sat down with ayahuasca, the plant medicine, and she's like, oh, you're so cute that you read all these science and information about this because Ayurveda knew it and the Chinese medicine knows it, that it's a stress on the body and you're not supposed to very often, that the less the better. And I'm like, oh, funny that we just like come back with science to the things that a lot of these ancient cultures knew already for thousands of years.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. I think almost every woman that I've ever spoken to has some degree of gut issues. So that could be emotional residue. That could be, you know, their physical capacity, like the mechanism in the gut. And of course, we know that there's a very intimate, you know, your gut harvests almost all of your immune system, a very large percentage of it. Certainly a lot of neurotransmitters are made in the brain, but there's also equivalents that are made in the gut, serotonin being one of the more well-known ones. And I think, yeah, if we have gut dysbiosis, if we have motility issues, if we are always clenching and sort of in that sympathetic dominance, which I'm referring to the nervous system here, not just feeling like you're sympathetic towards someone, but I'm referring to the nervous system. If we're always sort of stressed, right? If we're in that fight or flight state, of course, you're not going to be diverting blood to the trunk. You're going to be diverting blood to the periphery, right? Because you're going to be in that fight or flight. Am I fighting the enemy or am I running away from the enemy? So really well said there. And it kind of bridges another topic that I said I wanted to make sure that we get to in our conversation, which is stress management. I think that a lot of people tend to tune out. And so I'm going to ask everyone who's listening, hold on, because they're like, oh, I just tell me the hormone, tell me the glute exercise, tell me the nutrition hack, tell me the diet, tell me the calories. And really, it is almost impossible, I dare I say, simply impossible for you to be healthy if you don't have good stress management techniques. You talk a lot about, there's many different topics that you talk about in the book around stress management. I did want to hone in on a few. The first being forgiveness. How does forgiveness play in? And when we say forgiveness, I'm sure that you don't mean letting people off the hook for things that they have done, but it is just letting go potentially of maybe the hope that things could have been different. But I'll let you explain. How do you feel like forgiveness plays a role in a woman's health and her health, you know, maximization?
Oh, so interesting. You know, I have heard theories from people like Louis Hay, who says, you know, all disease comes from lack of forgiveness towards yourself or others. That's like the root cause of all disease, which obviously is a bold statement, but I went to Dave's 40 Years of Zen, Dave Asprey's 40 Years of Zen, which is like a place for neurofeedback for 5 days. You're plugged into the machine and they tell you, okay, you're in your alpha. For those who don't know, alpha is the meditation, kind of like where your brain when you wake up or like when you're meditating. So they prime your brain, and in that state, you spend 2 hours, 2.5 hours in this sensory deprived capsules that looks like you're about to go to space. And they make you sit there for 5 days and forgive people. So by day three, I was like, guys, no offense, but I don't have anyone to forgive. And I cannot believe this is what I'm going to be doing for a week. I'm a busy person. Like, I don't have time for this. And I realized that there were a lot of things that I immediately went into understanding why things happened. And I always never want to be in a victim mentality. So when someone did something wrong, I would be like, you know, it's always for the better, whatever. But I didn't realize that it's really important to actually let yourself feel the anger, the pain, the disappointment. It's just what we know about pain is that, you know, I had an angry dad, the most amazing person on the planet, but I'm like, oh, anger is towards someone, versus now I understand, oh, if I feel anger, it's a super healthy emotion. It keeps me alive. It's absolutely natural when I feel anger. I need to close myself in a room and either scream or punch the pillow or scream underwater, something that would let me healthily express that emotion that isn't directed at somebody else. And that was really life-changing, you know? And we're emotional beings. We process all of these emotions, and like the more we try to repress them, the more they express as a disease. And it's just more and more common with these. I think especially for women that we have a soul and a brain, and there's so much more going on than just how many macros you're eating and how much you're exercising. And I think you know that you're so much more than that. And so that everything that you're doing and following all of that advice will all be overridden by how you feel in your own body and how you feel in the environment. So understanding, like, I personally believe that my hardest spiritual practice has been forgiving myself, because I'm super, super hard on myself. So I can forgive everybody else, but like not myself for screwing up. And finally, at the 40 Years of Zen, by day four, my brain went from alpha to like gamma, which is basically the big eureka moment of the moment I started forgiving myself, truly forgiving myself, not just saying like, oh, it's okay. But if you have watched Good Will Hunting, and there's this scene when Matt Damon and Robin Williams have this moment where Robin Williams is like, it's not your fault. He's like, yeah, yeah, I know. And I'm like, no, it's not your fault. Like, you did the best you could. He's like, no, it's not your fault. And he finally let that sink in and like breaks down in tears because he realizes that like, we just do our best. Maybe your best wasn't great a month or two ago, but it still was your best. And so having that, again, grace and forgiveness towards yourself has been, for me, at least very, very life-changing and helped me just take a deep breath and realize, okay, I'm just a human and things aren't going perfect. And I forgive myself for it. And that has brought, obviously, the very different energy and very different people in my life, because I am like, if I'm hard on myself, I'm going to be hard on everyone else and be demanding and being very rigid. And I think I don't want that anymore for myself or others that I care about. So that was a big, big, big step in my journey. And I'm like, wow, that's the hardest thing to do, to forgive yourself, but the most powerful.
I love that. That's so great. And yeah, hardest thing to do, but so worth it. And sometimes, you know, to your point, you have to sit in it. You sort of have to marinate in those feelings. I think a lot of us were taught to run away from feelings that feel uncomfortable. And we do that under pseudonyms like, I'm going to set a boundary and I'm not going to, you know, we say, oh, I'm setting a boundary. I'm not going to allow myself to, or I'm not going to allow this person to criticize me or give me any type of feedback. And then, of course, what we do is we deny ourselves to literally metabolize those feelings. I think when you're able to sit with the discomfort, first, I think it's a really great practice to make yourself uncomfortable on a regular basis. I think that if you are just comfortable all the time, I mean, that's just my own personal philosophy. I think the more uncomfortable that we can become, or that we can sort of increase our, like if we can expand the comfort zone by getting uncomfortable, I think that's how we grow.
And I always say, like, if you don't choose discomfort, the life will choose it for you.
Right. Oh, that's well said too. Yeah. Good point. For women, the other thing that I think that we are lacking in is play and leaning into fun and silliness and even pleasure. I think even the word pleasure can have, you know, just initially some sexual undertones. So people are just very, like, they sort of bristle at it, even though pleasure is our birthright and we should always be feeling pleasurable to some extent. But maybe you can expand a little bit on the role of play and the role of maybe embracing that, you know, 6-year-old, 8-year-old, 12-year-old girl who just wants to be silly and do very girly things and allow her hair down, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I probably was the most boring adult on the planet not too long ago, because I was just like working and being productive and kind of feeling like play is just this boring thing and it's a waste of time. And the whole definition of play is actually doing something without a purpose and without getting somewhere, just for the sake of doing it. I was like, oh, interesting. Wait, I cannot like have any like results from it or like getting better. So that was like a very,
I can't maximize this or monetize this or put it on my resume.
Yeah. Or I was like, well, gym is my play. I love it. And I'm like, no, yeah, play, actually. And so I realized as cliche as this saying is, that we grow old, not because we stop playing, not because we grow old, we grow old because we stop playing. I realized, like, I'm not playful. I don't want this for myself. I want to be playful and fun. And, you know, playful doesn't mean irresponsible. It doesn't mean immature. Playful doesn't mean that you don't get things done. Playful just means that, like, hey, I'm not getting out of this life alive. So I might as well have a little bit of fun, because we're all going to die. And so on my deathbed, I'm probably not going to think that I wish I made a couple dollars more, but I will remember how much belly laughters I had. And there was this moment where I was like, oh my God, I haven't laughed in so long. And it would take me a long time I would need to watch a comedy. And it really just like, it had to be a thing. Okay, I'm now going to laugh, instead of like, everything can be funny if you just look at it and not treat life as seriously and just have a little bit of play. And you know, I mentioned a little bit about the plant medicine ayahuasca, but like my very first journey, she said, Aggie, you were not ready to have kids because you would turn your child into a small adult. But the only reason why we have kids is for them to remind us that we have a child inside of us. So you are the student, not the teacher. And you just have to learn from your child, you know, protect that inner child within yourself and within the child. And, you know, I have a dog and, you know, I have an interview with you. He like brings it to him, like, not now. And now I'm like, I used to do it for Peanut's 11. And now, like, for the last year, when Peanut's like comes in play, I catch myself saying, I always say not now, almost, because I always am doing something. So this time I'm like, okay, great, let's play. Like, I have all of these toys, so like I play with my dog and just like get myself a little bit less, take myself a little bit less seriously.
It's interesting too, and I would be interested to have a conversation with you in a couple years, maybe when you are a mother and you've had a chance to sort of watch your child grow a little bit. My observation of being a mother has been that I don't know how this is possible, but somehow we insert our own inner children into our children, and then they are there to sort of remind us of my, I have two sons, and one of them is absolutely it was exactly like how I was when I was little. I was playful, I was silly, I was joyous, I took pleasure in everything. And just observing him is a reminder of, you know, as an adult, some of the things that we forget to do, or we just stop doing. And of course, there's, you know, as a mother, you're always looking at, oh, the first walk, the first word, the first, you know, this and that. But what's also important is to be mindful of the lasts, right? Like the last time that they call you mommy, or the last time that they have a belly laugh as well. And to make sure that we're also preserving those things and cherishing them while they're here as well. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I'm so happy to hear. I think it's just, yeah, just such a beautiful proof that they are your teachers, right? There's never, again, this is an old paradigm in spirituality, that there's the teacher that who's above you, and then there's the student underneath, right? There's the pyramid. There are people that have the following and money, and people that don't. But what's happening right now, it's the energetical shift of like we're sitting in a circle. So teacher is also the student. You know, I'm sure you know the moment you start teaching something, how much you learn, right? The moment you start serving people. I'm not sure if that's your experience, but that has been my experience, for example. I'm like, I'm learning so much from people I speak to and from all of these conversations. So it's never this, it's always this. And that's what makes the best, the smartest sages like the most powerful, because they just never stop learning.
Yeah. I've always said, if you want to learn, teach. Yeah, because you will never learn the material as well as when you are presenting it to others. Yeah. This has been such a great conversation. I wanted to just wrap up with, if there's anything that you felt like we haven't covered, if there's anything that you wanted to make sure that we mention, whether it's topics from your book or life experiences or your own lived experience that you wanted to share in terms of what it means to live a well-lived life as a woman.
I mean, there's so many. I feel like we can invite people to the second part of this conversation at my podcast, where we will dive a little deeper, because I think this just, again, doesn't feel like this. It just feels like we're just dropping in. And I really, really appreciate your energy and to find out how beautiful it is to just marinate in your presence. It's been really, really great. So thank you for very thoughtful questions and actually just be truly listening and being present. It meant a lot. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So I will put all of the links for people if people want to follow you online, you know, and you can also tell people where you'd like to direct them if people want to learn more or interact with you.
Yeah. My Instagram at Aggie, A-G-G-I-E, or if you want to check out the book, it's on Amazon. It's called Biohack Like a Woman. Yeah. And my podcast is Biohacking Bestie, where I get to host the most incredible people.
Wonderful. All right. Those will all be clickable links in the show notes. Again, Aggie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely a delight. Thank you.
Thank you. Amazing.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And I must give you the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer here. This podcast, Better with Dr. Stephanie, is for general information only. And the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship that has been formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. In other words, guys, be smart about this. Take it with a grain of salt. Take this information to your primary healthcare provider and have a discussion with him or her to make the best choice that is for you. Remember, I'm a doctor, but I am not your doctor. And these conversations are meant for educational purposes only.